with all your success, this is an iconic company. This is so important for industry and for country. Before you retire, save Intel. That touched my heart.
Welcome back to The Angle from T. Rowe Price, a podcast for curious investors. Just a reminder that outside of the U.S., this podcast is for investment professionals only. For this episode of The Long View, I sat down with Lip-Bu Tan, CEO of Intel in Menlo Park, California. We discussed his journey to Intel, the future of AI infrastructure, and what it will take for one of technology's most iconic companies to compete in the next era of compute. Well, Lip-Bu, thank you so much for joining us on The Angle. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Intel is interesting. It's one of the few companies whose turnaround matters not only to shareholders, but to the structure of the entire global semiconductor supply chain, and frankly, to U.S. national, you know, sovereignty. Before we get into that, though, I'd love to start with you. I always like to get to know my guests a little bit personally, and you've got a really interesting story. Born in Malaysia, youngest of five. Your father was in the journalism business. Your mother worked at the university. As a kid, I'm curious, what did you love to do? Like, what did you spend your time on when you were a little kid?
So first of all, thank you so much for inviting me for this podcast. And I think a little bit of my background, born in Malaysia, Muar, Johor, just north of Singapore. And I, you know, followed my mom to Singapore for my education and high school, college, before I came to U.S. for graduate school. And when I was young, my brother and sister, they all, my mom is very strict with them. So they had to play, you know, piano lessons and all the way up to performance and composer. And my brother is an orchestra playing violin. And then I was supposed to do the same thing in the piano, and I was just too lazy. And then I love catching spider, and I play basketball, volleyball as a team. And so I kind of having fun. And my mom, you know, being the youngest, he let me do whatever I want. So it turned out to be a lot of freedom to do that.
That's great.
And then my mom also, for some reason, he said, well, all your brother and sister, they sent to English school. The last one is that, well, I sent you to Chinese school. So learn the Confucian theory and everything. And so, you know, I always apologize to me that, sorry that your English is not good as a second language. So in some way, I survive.
Well, you definitely did more than survive. That's a really great story. I was also the youngest. The youngest always get away with
a little
more.
Exactly.
It's a good place to be in the birth order.
I love basketball. I love volleyball. And then, the vocal lesson and piano is kind of boring for me. And until now, I appreciate that. That's why I was on board of the San Francisco Opera, and I love music. And then you can't do it yourself, then you just be supportive.
Just be a supporter. So then you went on to major in physics.
Yes.
What did something in particular draw you to physics, or just it was you're good in that area and you liked it?
Yeah, in some ways, follow my brother and sister. And, you know, in some way, my brother is a Rhodes Scholar. And then went to Cambridge and Oxford. And then I tried to, my teacher always said that, well, you're doing great, but you're less than your brother. And so you know that feeling. So I want to do something different from my brother. And he became the cardiologist, to artificial heart, and he do physics. So initially I doing physics just like him in Nanyang Technology University. And I say physics thought they're pretty good. I'm good with mathematics. Physics is all the physical. And then it's good training. And I did it in 3 years. And then, but they said, well, you're not, your brother is better. So I decided to change, you know, to come to U.S. And then do a nuclear engineering.
Right, so you were the slacker, so you had to go to MIT to get your master's in nuclear engineering. Okay, I understand.
Because I applied to Berkeley and Stanford, they reject me. So MIT, for some reason, they accept me to be a nuclear engineer. That's why I pursued that.
That's great. What was your impression of the U.S. when you, was that your first time in the U.S. when you went to MIT?
So from Singapore, and kind of exciting to come to MIT at Boston. Mm-hmm. And then they're so excited, the first time to see snow. And somehow right. I just fell
not
in
a lot
love
of snow
with snow.
In Singapore, yeah.
No, never see a snow, yeah. a piece of snow. So in some way, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And of course, the Charles River, the Boston, and it just is amazing. I just love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. So you got your degree from MIT, and then you did some technical work. You were in the energy industry for a while, you know, doing some of that. But then you ended up with a really interesting background, and you moved to Walden, one of the, you know, most important venture firms, especially in the Asia-Pacific region. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
So I didn't finish my PhD because of Three Mile Island accident.
Mm-hmm.
The placement director, because their office had the aircon.
Right.
So I love to do my homework at this office. I think he's kind of bored. I'm the only person in the room. So he talked to me, and I said, which department? I said, Department 22, the nuclear engineering. And his jaw dropped. He said, get out of here. There's no nuclear power plant built right. at the Three Mile Island.
Right.
I said, I have a full research assistant. You know, I'm comfortable, and then doing my PhD. Don't listen to your professor. Just get out. So I wrap up my master's degree. And then I said, well, I don't know where to apply. I'm a foreign student. He said, okay, just apply to one company called EDS Nuclear. So I applied. My whole life, I wrote one resume to apply to that. And then they sent me a three-day trip, leaving the hotel, and never visit San Francisco. So I went and visit. Then they give me a job.
Yeah.
And then so long and behold, they asked me to do a rotation. Said, Libo, what do you like to do? I said, I have no clue. So he said, okay, we just put a program for you. Every 3 months, you go to a different location. At the end, he said, well, Libo, which division you want? And I said, maybe your office, doing project management. Done. Uh-huh. And so I worked with the president and then helped him to do the project management.
Uh-huh.
And one day, three of the senior executive vice president called me up for lunch. And he said, if you want to get some more budget or review, we can do it in the conference room. He said, promise you, no business. And we just want to take you for lunch. I said, okay, great. And then long and behold, that lunch is basically asked me to join them to do a startup.
Ah, okay.
So that's my first startup experience.
Uh-huh.
That time, I'm only about 20 plus years old, 21 or 22, nothing to lose.
That's how you got there. Okay, interesting. Well, let's fast forward a little bit. So you end up in 2004 after a successful venture career, starting some of the most important companies in the industry supply chain, especially on the hardware side, which is interesting. So most people now think of venture as sort of the software side, but really big on the hardware side. You joined the Cadence board in 2004. And then in 2009, you became CEO, had that job for 12 years. Interestingly, though, when you took over Cadence, it was an established company, but going through a pretty rough time. So, you know, what did you learn in terms of sort of turning around that company that you've had to bring forward as you've thought about your role at Intel today?
Yeah, so a little bit background, you know, since I, you know, become venture capitalist, and I tried to knock on everybody's doors,
mm-hmm.
and everybody said, nice to meet you, but nobody gave me an offer. So I now find out the small firm called Warden Capital,
uh-huh.
it's a SBIC. And then so I told them, the two partner, I said that you don't have to pay me, I'll pay for myself.
Uh-huh.
And so I end up that I raised about $3.3 million. That's how I start Warden International.
Okay.
And then right now we manage about almost more than $4 billion
uh-huh.
under management. And then I kind of build brick by brick in terms of Asia, because people thought that, Lipo, what is your master plan? Actually, I don't have my master plan. I just want to go and visit my mom in Singapore. And that's why I built that. And then long and behold, and the venture capital I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And not to brag about it, you know, under my watch on Warden International, we invest, myself and also some of my colleagues, we have 153 IPO.
Wow.
And 126 M&A transactions, successful one. So not to brag about it, I'd really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And
well, 3.3 million to 4 billion, that's a big return.
$3 million as a start.
$3 million.
To become a couple of billion under management. And so with that, I kind of enjoy doing that. One day I got called to join the company called Cadence Design to join the board. Mm-hmm. And I said, why do I need to join a Cadence board? And you're not number one, you're number two. Yeah. Synopsys is number one. So I kind of hesitate to join. And then the chief, my friend at Synopsys, said, Lip-Bu, you shouldn't join number two, you should join us. But long story short, I decided to join number two. Uh-huh. And so enjoy doing that. And one day, phone keep ringing. Finally, I pick up the phone. What's up? I said, Lip-Bu, can you come back quickly? I said, yeah, tomorrow I'm flying back. And then I found that they said, oh, Lip-Bu, we just fired the CEO. And then you should join, you become an interim CEO. That is $2.42 when I took over.
Yeah.
And then I was supposed to do 3 months. And I want to go back to my venture business that I my first love. And they said about 3 months, we do a search. And then initially, they include me in the search committee. But later on, I was so busy with customer. So I said, you know, why don't you guys do the search? You find the CEO, let me know. I'll pass the key to him. Then I move back to venture capital. Mm-hmm. And one day, the chairman came over. And with smiling face, I said, okay, now I can give you the key. Mm-hmm. I can go back to my Kate and my warden side. Lip-Bu, you can keep your key. I said, wait a minute. So that's my 3 month journey, become 15 years, you know, 12 and a half years as a CEO. Then I recruit my successor.
Yep.
And then I served on 2 years as executive chairman. And then I stepped down after 15 years.
Yeah.
And then just being a large shareholders.
Yeah.
And so learned quite a bit. You know, first of all, I never been the CEO, so the director of human HR gave me 3 books, you know, CEO for Dummy. So I read every page. And then one thing good is, you know, you don't have the background, and I'm very open-minded. Mm-hmm. So I make a huge mistake. Mm. I reach out to the employee all-hand meeting. Uh-huh. I said that if you have any good idea about how to run this company, send me an email. And then I received 3,000 plus email per day. Wow. But I did promise I respond each one of them.
Wow.
And some of them, I visit them. Uh-huh. They drop to tears. They said, Lip-Bu, we send an email to CEO, never got reply.
Yeah.
And you show up in my cubicle and try to listen to us. It's amazing. And we love it. Love you. So long story short, you know, I stay on for 15 years, turn around the company. And then I kind of formed my thesis of how to turn around.
So it's interesting. One of the things that you just mentioned about your Cadence experience was, you know, really getting to know the technicals and understanding the details of what the company does and what really matters to customers. Let's fast forward to your time at Intel now. So kind of a similar story. You're on the board. They make a CEO change and they ask you to step in and run the company. What was the first thing that you did when you got to Intel?
Yeah, good news is that 2 years on the board, mm-hmm. and also before that, you know, when I came from school, Intel is a role model for successful semiconductor company in terms of gross margin, in terms of paranoid survive, those things that I care a lot, mm-hmm. and a lot of admirations. So it's kind of sad to see that the company is kind of spiraled down.
Yep.
And meanwhile, it's an iconic company.
Yeah.
And it's so important for the industry and also for United States. Mm-hmm. So when they asked me to step in to be a CEO, it's not an easy decision. Mm. Couple of very good friends of mine in the industry, they are CEO somewhere and also some top executive. 80% of people I talked to, they told me, don't do it.
Don't do it.
You know, first of all, you know, no guarantee of success. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you have so much success in building company. You turn around Cadence Design, you don't need another one.
Right.
People know that you're good.
Yeah.
And people only remember the last one.
Right.
So if you screwed up, you know, you're going to be a failure for the rest of your life. So it's quite compelling.
Yeah.
And then, but there's one friend of mine, he told me, the Lip-Bu, he sent me a very nice, thoughtful, he's from Seattle, mm-hmm. a good friend of mine, is a good customer. He said, Lip-Bu, with all your success, this is an iconic company. This is so important for industry and for country. before you retire, save Intel. That touched my heart.
Wow.
And then the other part is, 5 years ago, I was one of the final candidate, two final candidate. That time I decided not to take it because, you know, I did promise Anirudh, my successor at Cadence, I will stay on until he become a CEO.
Mm.
And so timing is not right. So I passed.
Okay.
And then, but this time, you know, my wife even supported. Mm. And last one, he said no. And for very good reason for family. And then this time, you know, at home, she's the boss.
Yeah.
And we managed for 44 years.
Wow, congratulations.
And he said that this time, I think your heart is already in.
Uh-huh.
I can see you emotionally so upset about some of the thing happened.
Yep.
You may as well do it. I will support you.
Oh, that's great.
So that meant a lot to me. So I think I decided to jump in.
Yep.
And then that's my beginning of the Intel journey.
So when you get there, the company's, you know, really had a struggle. It's gone from sort of the iconic, you know, truly differentiated manufacturer to sort of well surpassed by several competitors, especially TSMC. What was the first thing that you did? You diagnose it as a strategy problem, an execution problem, or something else?
So one thing I did is I decided from day one, just back to that Cadence, I want to have all engineering report to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I can start to identify where are the problem with the product, mm-hmm. where is the problem with the foundry, yield and customer feedback. And so first of all, I think engineering, so that I have a better understanding what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I spend a lot of time with customer,
mm-hmm.
and then customer share with me the little, we are so excited you become the CEO. And they give me a lot of feedback, some of the big mistakes make.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is very interesting. They said, well, they are so proud. They lecture us, not only not listen to us, they lecture us. Then we basically quietly design Intel out.
Mm-hmm.
Now we share with you the 14 screwed up that you have. And I took down every single screwed up.
Yep.
And I get back to them one by one.
Fixed
and that's
each
why
one.
He said, Lipo, we just love you. And we're just delighted that you listen carefully what we describe to you. So one thing good about me is I listen to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
I take notes. Every meeting I come prepare, I take notes. And then make sure that we correct the mistake.
Right.
And then I will tell the team, look, you have to tell me all the bad news.
Yeah.
If I went to the customer, I go to the customer, they share something that you didn't share with me, you're in deep trouble.
Yep.
So share with me bad news, then you will be fine.
We have that expression, bad news needs to travel fast.
Very
good
fast.
News always travels fast.
Good
that's
news,
not
you
a
can
problem.
Always celebrate later on in nanosecond to celebrate for it.
Yep.
And that's kind of my style. And then the other part is very important to focus on changing the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that when I took over, we have many layers of management. Mm. And then some of them is north of 10. And I try to shrink it down to 5.
Wow.
And so hold people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So when something screw up, everybody point finger or somebody else. Nobody take responsible for it.
Yeah.
So I said that, well, I'm going to put people in charge that they are accountable to me. And I go down to 6-7 layers down. It's not micromanaging, but it's kind of make sure that we're really addressing the issue of design and listen to the customer and then make sure that we correct that. So that accountability is very important.
Yep.
Secondly, the middle management love to have meetings. So I talked to more than 100 top executives from Intel before. They told me that 89% of their time spent in meetings.
Mm.
At the end, same presentation, I had to repeat 36 times, and not nobody make decision, or the decision maker have no clue about the product.
Right.
They don't make a decision.
Yeah.
So I hear that loud and clear. So I decided, you know, speed of, I call it the speed of light.
Uh-huh.
And then so you have to move fast like startup.
Yep.
And then don't have this long meeting. So I'm the first one, second example. It's a meeting without agenda, without clear deliverable answer at the end of the meeting, we just cancel the meeting.
Yep.
And then or meeting that I don't see there's value that I can bring in, there's no point for me in the meeting. So people are starting to realize liberals just don't like meeting.
Right.
If you want to have a meeting, be better prepared because liberals want to have your material 2-3 days beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
He really read through every single one. You don't have to go to slide to slide presentation.
Yeah.
He will ask you the 5 questions that he want to know, the meeting finished.
And then you're done.
And they're done. So I think to be respectful, they prepare a lot. So make sure that you pay attention to it so that you give them the honest feedback or decision making so you don't have to waste people's time. I think people like that. So I think all in all, those are the few key changes.
Yep.
Listen to customer and focus on the right product, address and change the product. We can go into detail which are the product we need to change.
Yep.
And then what are the foundry and then understanding the foundry business and not just the yield, performance, defect density, cycle time. Also, you need to have the right IP to serve the customer. Without that, you don't even talk about customer. Right. They won't engage.
So before we get into that, I do want to ask you, so when you got started, you had a lot of things to change at Intel. You just talked about those. You didn't get the warmest reception from the U.S. government out of the gate. But then you met with the president, and now the U.S. is a large shareholder, and I think you have regular contact with at least the administration through the Commerce Secretary or through the president directly. So how does it impact running the company when you have a large shareholder that's the U.S. government?
Yeah, first of all, I think not Thursday early morning, my phone kept ringing. They said, well, President wants to have you resign. And then, so first of all, I kind of talked to myself because I usually morning I have a gym and swim before I do my work. Mm-hmm. And that day a little bit disrupted because of this phone call. So I had to pay attention. First of all, I just tell myself, I don't need this job.
Mm-hmm.
I come here just to save Intel. So take myself out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on what needs to be done for the company. And so first of all, I just set up an appointment to see President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And then good news is they listened to me, at least let me explain. I'm born in Malaysia, grew up in Singapore. I went to MIT. I never leave the country after this. My grandchildren, my children, they all live in U.S. This is our home. I never live in China. And so I'm glad they listened to me.
Yep.
And then so very clear after they listened to me, he said, Lipo, we want to own 10% of the company, of your vision. And I did share my vision. How they asked me how long to turn around. I said, 2 years. Give me 2 years.
Yep.
And then the next day, he said, today is Monday afternoon. Friday, I want to announce that we own 10%. So you work out with Howard and Scott, and that's my assignment.
Uh-huh.
So I worked really hard on it. So good news is we negotiate the term, and I think it's a very attractive term. It's a very commercial term.
Yep.
They have no governance. They have no board seat. And then I think you saw the social media. They are very proud that we make more than 5 times.
Yeah, for his investment. Been a good investment. Yeah.
Yeah.
No
so
doubt.
I think they're happy. Yeah. They have been good cheerleader and be supportive, and that's what I need.
So let's take it to where we are today with the business. So, data center CPU usage is exploding as agentic use cases come, and for a long time it was sort of all about the GPU, but now the CPU has really come to the fore. So a lot of demand for anything CPU related. Obviously, that's Intel's core. But competition's actually, really picking up. We've got AMD and NVIDIA announcing their new CPU. Hyperscalers are designing their own. So take us to where you see your competitive advantage today and what you've got on the roadmap here.
So I think, in some way, if you kind of monitoring what I say in my earnings call, and I thought that CPU is very important, especially when you go into the agentic and inference.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad in life, sometimes you need a break.
Yeah.
And the break, it turned out to be the case. And then, as you know, I also invest in a lot of frontier company.
Yep.
And so understanding the reinforced learning and then the agentic, managing all the agents, orchestration, CPU actually is better use.
Mm-hmm.
For the ratio, from training is 1 CPU to 8 GPU. And then now I'm starting to see CPU to GPU, the ratio for inference is almost 1-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
So that turned out to be a big great opportunity for me. Like anytime you see a huge opportunity, people all want to come in.
Right.
So first of all, I think clearly AMD is very well respected. Lisa is a very good friend of mine. And I'm really delighted that he's doing very well. Mm-hmm. I still remember he came to me and said, Lipo, should I take this job?
Uh-huh.
And I told her that your market cap cannot be lower than Ambarella that I'm a chairman. And you got to be higher than that. And I turned out that he done a fabulous job on that.
Yeah.
Then, of course, the other part is ARM.
Yep.
You know, NVIDIA is based on ARM.
Right.
And even ARM himself, they want to not just IP licensing, they also try to build the CPU products. So now I decided to build within Intel to do that. So it's something that purpose-built silicon, GPU, and also some of this connectivity, purpose-built silicon based on different workload, that would be the future for Intel for growth. And so different application, different type of CPU, you need to do surgical so that you can really optimize for different workload. And the other part, we have the CPU. Now I'm quietly building my GPU. I hired the top GPU architect. And I'm also going to get one or two top-notch CPU architect so that I can build the different workload for different agentic AI. And then, so I think that part, stay tuned, that's where my growth engine going to be.
Interesting.
And then I have the CPU, GPU, I have the advanced packaging, and the most advanced packaging. I had the coming up really strong on the process foundry. So then I have the supply chain. I can build the purpose build in a different application. Right now I'm going after the vertical market I'm going after. So I think stay tuned, that will be my future growth.
So you're really taking the expression, your margin is my opportunity here to bring it home for Intel. One of the things that somebody's explained to me when you think about the foundry business and just how competitive that is, it's a little bit like being on a treadmill where every 2 minutes somebody increases the speed at which you have to run. Do you feel like you've got to sort of start running even faster now? Because, you know, Intel kind of fell off that treadmill for a while. How do you get back up to pace with these competitors?
So I think first thing I do is basically strengthen my balance sheets.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember the first few months, some of the talent I tried to bring on board is a Lipo, literally a bankrupt company.
Yeah.
And then why should I join you? I love you, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not joining. But finally, I addressed the balance sheet. That's the most important first step. Secondly, is really attract some of the best talent I can get.
Yep.
Each one of them I'm building, same thing with the GPU architect, CPU architect, same thing with the foundry. So I pick some of the leading technology leader to come on board and then helping me to drive and also outside help. And I also change the culture. Intel used to be very proud, don't even share the data.
Mm-hmm.
And I insist to share the data.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, you know, the people, they got the data, they call me up, Lipo, the number look horrible. And I say, well, that's why I'm asking you for help.
Right.
So help my good friend. So they did help me. And then the other part is some of the, you know, we call it Intel 3. These are the older node. Our use is very poor.
Mm-hmm.
I just insist somebody to fly over there. Don't come back until you fix the problem. And then basically, if you see that I increased my CapEx because I had to buy equipment for building up the, you know, the lead time is quite long.
Well, and the CapEx intensity has gotten so high now. I mean, you've really got to invest behind these things aggressively.
So I will be doing that. And so I think, you know, I'm excited. And so I think we're going to be a major player. And then in some way, back to this national treasure.
Right.
For the advanced technology foundry, there's only one in US. It's us.
Yeah.
And then 90%+ is manufacturing in Taiwan.
Right.
So something, you know, when you have only one company, it's always very risky for resilient and robust supply chain. You need that.
Yep.
We learned that from the memory now.
Right.
It's a big crisis going on.
Yep.
So again, I think, you know, from the product side, I'm building up to regain my market share. And then some of the new market I'm going after. And then on the PC client, and the big fun opportunity is agentic AI. and then the physical AI going to be next big wave. You need to have a full stack. So I also going to move into the whole system platform. So it's not just selling a chip. So I want to have my software. I want to have, that's why you saw my announcement with Foxconn. I'm going to be more partnership and more, you know, the focus on the best technology leadership team to drive me. So in a way, I'm just not just, if you saw my Computex speech, it's not I do the whole speech. I have my colleagues doing some part of it. So in a way, it's like basketball team. You have a team and then you just play your role. And so I become a conductor and then cheering for the all the executive team to deliver, and I support them. And you're going to see that. And same thing, I embrace the partnership. You can't do everything yourself, you know.
Well, and it sounds like the vision here is so much more than just, you know, the way Intel is described today, right? You have the PC business, you have the data center business, you have the foundry business. But this is a lot more over time if you're bringing in all of these different layers and going and beyond that. What do you think is a reasonable time frame to deliver on all these different ambitions that you have? Is this a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan?
When I came on board, the board and I, we work on 5-year plan. And then the 5-year plan, I think I accomplished in 14 months. So the last board meeting, they asked me, Lipo, it got to be bigger. And then you already get what you want, you know, in 5 years, suppose you did it in 14 months. So I think I grew up 5-year, 10-year plan with God willing, you know, I will continue to do that. And then I tell my team, you know, I'm here for 10 years, so don't think that I'm going to leave somewhere. And then we just focus on the business, focus on the product, focus on the process, as if I'm going to be here for 10 years. And then, of course, just I, you know, at Cadence, I will gradually bring in talent that are potentially my successor. So you can stay tuned, see some of the people I brought on board.
Watch you
groom. Those will be the the candidate for me. And, you know, I want to have a strong bench. And I told my team, don't get too hang up about how many people report to you, how big a scope you are. Just be part of the team. We're going to be, we want to work for championship like New York Knicks, you know. We want to be a championship team. Let's do each one play our part. I will play my part. You know, I would get my job done. You get your job done. And we help each other. And then we are getting the coach to coach us to how to be a good team player and then win the championship. And the goal is much higher than what I said. And then so let's work on it for next 10 years and hopefully we'll be a great company that we all can be proud of.
Let me ask you one more before we go to our kind of lightning round at the end. We're clearly in an amazing CapEx cycle, like one that's hard to even put into any historical context because it's so amazing. But all cycles end at some point. If you had to just make a prediction on how this one will eventually end, what would be the cause?
Yeah, I think it's hard to predict, but let me just show a few pointers that I kind of form my own opinion. So one, this whole AI growth is very exciting to build a massive infrastructure. And I think the thing that it's a little bit remind me of internet, but this is bigger than internet. But if you look at internet, there's going to be a few big winners. And they are really laser focused on what application they want to drive. You look at Netflix. You look at Amazon. You know, it's really disrupt the industry by this new way of doing things. Then you look at AI, I think you can starting to see things is changing. So I think you're starting to see some of this AI movement. I really focus on what application, what ROI. You know, in fact, I just joined the MIT CEO Advisory Board. And there's two professors present something was very eye-catching. They are addressing, today they don't see the ROI. They don't see the performance improvement. And in terms of productivity.
There have been a bunch of little academic studies that show this.
They show that. In some way, it's kind of keep you alert, even though I may not agree to what they are presenting, mm-hmm. but it's a very important to focus what application, yeah. what are you driving?
Got to see the return.
So you got to see the application. Yep. Then you triple down, design the product to drive those application. Yeah. And then I think you have a better chance to succeed. And that's why I kind of formulate my strategy. Mm-hmm. And then so over time, I become the infrastructure or the silicon or platform providing those applications.
Interesting. That's a smart way to do it. We've got a series coming in July on The Angle, actually looking at how AI moves from promise into real world impact. And that's really, it sounds like what you're getting at. I'd love to, if you don't mind, if you'll indulge me, we like to end these with a few rapid fire questions. Just this is going to be a little wider variety.
I will try. I'm not good at it. But
well, we'll see how you can do. We're going to bounce from Intel related to personal here. Okay. Best you can, short answer. Describe Intel today in one word.
Technology.
What's the first piece of technology you ever fell in love with?
Quantum.
What company outside of tech do you admire the most?
I would say Netflix.
What's your must read every morning?
Very good question. One is the morning, one is the evening.
Okay.
So the first thing in the morning, what I did is meditation.
Ah, okay. What about the evening?
Evening also meditation.
Okay.
But the morning after meditation, and in fact, I do my meditation while I'm doing the swimming.
Interesting.
Every morning I swim.
And you can meditate while you swim. That's great. Yes. Okay, a couple more. Your favorite guilty indulgence of food, the food that you eat that you probably shouldn't.
You know, my favorite food is a king of fruit, durian.
Ah.
You know, the spicy one?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of spice.
Yeah.
And you open up, it tastes like the bitter, the better. It's a little bit like cheese.
Yeah.
You know, they call it the Mao San Wang, Chinese word.
Yeah.
It's the mountain cat.
Mountain cat.
And that is the most bitter, and I love it.
Okay, I've never had it.
Yes.
All right. If you could only do one of the following, would you play a video game, a card game, or a board game?
Card game.
And then last one, your favorite science fiction movie?
I think... Star Wars.
All right. That's mine too. Very good. This has been so fun. Thank you so much, Lip-Bu. Really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us here on The Angle.
Thank you so much.
Again, I'm Eric Vial. Thank you for listening to The Angle. We look forward to your company on future episodes. You can find more information about this and other topics on our website. Please rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Angle. Better questions, better insights, only from T. Rowe Price.
This podcast episode was recorded in June of 2026 and is for general information and educational purposes only. Outside of the United States, it is for investment professional use only. It is not intended to be used by persons in jurisdictions which prohibit or restrict distribution of the material herein. This podcast episode does not give advice or recommendations of any nature or constitute an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any security in any jurisdiction. Prospective investors should seek independent legal, financial, and tax advice before making any investment decision. Past performance is not a guarantee or a reliable indicator of future results. All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of principal. Discussions relating to specific securities are informational only and are not recommendations, and may or may not have been held in any T. Rowe Price portfolio. Any forward-looking statements are for discussion purposes only and are never guaranteed. There should be no assumption that the securities were or will be profitable. T. Rowe Price is not affiliated with or a subsidiary of any company discussed. The views contained herein are those of the speakers as of the date of the recording and are subject to change without notice. These views may differ from those of other T. Rowe Price associates and or affiliates. Information is from sources deemed reliable but not guaranteed. Please visit https://www.troweprice.com/en/uk/insights/the-long-view-intel for full global issuer disclosures. This podcast is copyright by T. Rowe Price, 2026.